This is Money in Motion with Klaus Financial, a fun and informative show designed to help you get answers to all your retirement questions in one place.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to Klaus Financial's Money in Motion. Answers to all your retirement questions in one place. For more information about Klaus Financial and anything we talk about in these next two segments, which are sponsored by Klaus Financial, go to klausfinancial.com. That's K-L-A-A-S financial.com. Joining us this week in person, Malia and CJ. Malia and CJ, welcome back.
Welcome back to you too, Michael. How you doing?
Great. It's great to hear you both again, you in particular, and see you, Malia. You, I know, went on a little excursion. Did you go overseas?
Yeah, I went to Europe and got to meet my daughter, who was just getting off a ship from her semester at sea studies. So it was very exciting to be in London and Portugal. And the first thing everybody asked me as an American was, what's going on with that Trump guy? So I thought you could appreciate that.
Yeah, that's funny. That's what everyone asks me here in the United States as well.
So good to be back.
Now, I know that the Klaus quiz question of the week is something we ask at all of these Money in Motion shows, and we'll be asking that later. And the person who calls in first with the correct answer to the question this week wins a $25 gift card for Texas Roadhouse. And we talk about a variety of topics every week. This week, I understand you're going to talk about some information that not everyone is aware of when they're discussing financial matters. What exactly do you mean?
Well, we start off talking about the Did You Know segment, and really what that has to do with is it always depends on where you fall on that retirement spectrum. What I'm meaning by that is some things seem relevant when you're getting closer to retirement. So you've been hearing about things for years, but it's not until you're within that five-year window of actually pulling the plug, perhaps of retiring, that something you've heard maybe from our shows or whatever actually starts clicking, and you're like, oh, you're talking about me, Social Security. I better start listening. So we like to just point these out often in our shows, the Did You Knows. And one of the Did You Knows today has to do with the distribution. You realize once you stop working, you're going to need income from somewhere. And that's always the biggest question. You know, how much do I need to have accumulated? What is my income going to look like? Where is it going to come from? And so that's one of the common questions we see, CJ and I, when we sit down with clients, is people saying, how much do I need? How much can I pull out? Because I think there's this myth. If I'm making, let's say, $80,000 a year, in retirement, I'm going to have that magical number just show up in my paycheck or in my account. And actually, we need to be figuring between your actual Social Security, perhaps you have a pension, and what other investments are going to feed into that. So how much can I spend on a yearly basis when I'm in retirement? So I'm going to have CJ kind of give us a figure so people can kind of cement that in their heads. CJ?
How are you doing, CJ?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great.
Good. Yeah, so as Malia was talking about, and I think we went over this a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the, you know, four or five-legged stool of retirement income. But yes, one of those legs of that stool is your retirement investments. Again, your 401k, 403b, 457 plan. And obviously, the goal is not to just, you know, put a bunch of money in there so that when we get to retirement, we can kind of puff out our chest and say, see how much I have in net worth, right? Although some people do that. But the goal is to actually turn that net worth into an income stream that that hopefully lasts the remainder of your life. And I think we had talked about 2 weeks ago, the number one fear for retirees is, of course, running out of money before they run out of life. And so this distribution rate becomes critical. We'll have some people come into the office and say, hey, I've saved whatever the number is, $100,000, and I plan on taking $10,000 a year out of that to live off of. And I think that should last me the next 30 years. Well, the math doesn't work real well on that. That's 10% per year distribution, right? 10,000 into 100 grand, simple math, is 10%. Listen, it's not going to last you 30 years. And so determining a realistic, reasonable, sustainable distribution rate is critical. Now, the number we had talked about 2 weeks ago is about 4%. But what I'll tell people is, even at 4%, you can't just simply say that's a guaranteed 4% distribution rate for the rest of your life. That is something that has to be dynamically reviewed and adjusted based on what's happening in the markets at that time. So we start with a 4% distribution off of whatever it is that you saved. And then from there, if the markets do fairly well, we can see slight increases in that number or slight decreases in that number based on what's happening in the marketplace. But again, 4% is the number that we usually start with as a reasonable, sustainable distribution rate throughout retirement.
4%, and that's something on average people look at as far as how long, you know, I know a 4% distribution is about all your portfolio can handle, I've heard, through a certain period of how long you're going to retire. But that's the other question too, right, is how long do you plan on being retired?
That's right.
Not 10 years, probably you're going to want to be alive and retired for a little bit longer than that, right?
Well, and what we always ask people is, if you can tell us how long you're going to be here, I can figure it out by day how much you can pull out, right? So that's
no
really
one knows
the question.
That.
And you know, the fact is people are working longer, sometimes because they have to, sometimes because they want to. But that's what's key. So if we're looking at a 25-year possible retirement, we do expect that the portfolio, in a conservative portfolio, should generate between 4 to 5%. So you're trying to keep your principal intact, which is really important, of course. Some years you're going to do better, some years a little worse. But as CJ said, kind of centering on what can make sense and reevaluating it. Life crises happen, unfortunately. You have to adjust for that. And so some years you may be able to take a little bit more, but if you want to stay on the right path, you're going to have to subscribe to pretty close to a 4%.
Well, and Michael, you do bring up an interesting point, which is, you know, it depends. And I know we talked about this 2 weeks ago. It depends. It depends if you're retiring at age 80 and you have a chronic illness. You know, throw out everything I just said. 4%
exactly
doesn't apply to you. You could do 15% and probably be fine. If you're retiring at 40 years old and you plan on having this last you until you're 90, you might want to throw out my 4% again. Maybe it's only 3%. So it does depend on a lot of factors. But the reason we try to give some sort of percentage for people to at least start with is because I think when you're doing it on your own, which unfortunately a lot of Americans are trying to do their own retirement planning, they don't even have a sense of where to begin. Right? They have no clue. And so the clue that we're giving you is it starts around 4%, but even from there, you need to work, I would argue, you need to work with somebody who's confident and competent in evaluating that distribution rate based on your goals and objectives.
Now, I understand, you know, if you have money in a portfolio for a certain period of time, you want it to be in the market for as long as possible, because if you only have it in for a short amount of years, you might miss a great little, you know, up in the market or a down in the market, right? The longer you're in there, the longer window there is, the better chance that you're not going to miss one of those, you know, great or best days in the market.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, we can all learn from people like Warren Buffett, who have told us that you need to stay invested. Easier said than done. I mean, you know, there's great days in the market and people feel like they're God when they're looking at their portfolios, and then they freak out when 2008 happens, and we know people who are still sitting in cash from 2008. Now look at the
wow,
great upswing they have missed these last several years. So what's important to recognize is nobody can time it. If you're working with someone who says they are going to help time your portfolio, we would say don't walk but run away from that person. because the truth is nobody knows what day that's going to happen. So we like to refer back to a statistic. This is taken from a Morgan Asset Management Company, their guide to retirement, and they said that if an investor stayed fully invested in the S&P 500 from 1993 to 2013, they would have had a 9.2 annualized return, which sounds great, right? But if they traded and missed just 10 of the best days during that same period, their annualized returns would drop to 5.4%. So the point is we cannot time it. If you stay invested, and we talk about the lost decade sometimes, depending on where when you came in and went out, you may have shown basically a flat zero return. But generally speaking, over time, the market will return a good overall return, but you can't time it. So, you know, a 9.2% annualized return over a long period of time is substantial. CJ?
Well, and here's a fun fact. Yeah. Here's a fun fact for people. There was a study that was done, and I'm going to butcher this a little bit, but stick with me. There's a study that was done that looked at, all right, if you had just owned the S&P 500 or the general market for the last 50 years, you would have done something between like an 8 and a 10% rate of return. That's just buying and holding and not doing anything, not freaking out when it goes down and not getting too euphoric when it goes up. But then they looked at actual volume going in and out of the market at various times, because we all know, right, we have this herd mentality. So when the market's doing really, really well, more people tend to buy. When it's doing really poorly, they tend to sell. But there was a study that was done to look at the amount of volume that the average non-professional investor was putting in or out of the market at different times. And what they figured out was over that same 50-year time frame, the average retail investor had a 0.2% average annual rate of return because of how much they were putting in and out at various times. So even though the market tends to do well over time, your average investor does not. And that just is a pure indication of a fundamental misunderstanding of how to invest. So I really encourage people, if you're going to pick a strategy and go with it and allow it to play out, or work with an advisor who can help to carry that out for you.
And one such advisor, actually many such advisors, are available at Cost Financial. The number at Cost Financial is 815-877-8440. That's 815-877-8440. That is also the number to call when we ask our cost quiz question of the week, which we will ask on the other side of this short break. This is the Michael Coolidge Show's Cost Financial Money in Motion. Don't go anywhere.
This is Money in Motion with Klaus Financial, a fun and informative show designed to help you get answers to all your retirement questions in one place.
That's right. We are back on Klaus Financial's Money in Motion. And before the break, we were talking about, staying in the market and not trying to time the market. Another item you have here on the list is a 1035 exchange. CJ or Malia, can you clarify what a 1035 exchange is?
Yeah, this is something we run into quite often, actually. We run into people who perhaps have purchased either life insurance from years ago that's accumulated a lot of cash value, or perhaps they have an annuity, which of course is derived from a life insurance company, and they've had it for years and they're ready to move it out and they're like, what do I do? And so we're insurance licensed. We understand how this works. And our number one concern always is, whoa, let's slow down here and let's look at what are the ramifications if A, I just cash it out, or B, move it into another annuity. And so we're not here today to tell you yay or nay on situations, because they're going to be specific to each listener. But the point is that an annuity provides for gain within the contract, and that gain is not realized until you go ahead and take the money out as a distribution. And so there's this false understanding that if I just cash it out, I would only pay capital gains. And that is incorrect. An annuity actually houses those gains. And when it comes out, it's actually income taxable. And that can be a big deal, because we've run into this all the time. Someone starts with $5,000 in an annuity contract, say from 20 years ago, and over the years they've moved it, and now they might have, $45,000 worth of gain, which would not just be capital gain, but actually income taxable. So what we have, the IRS has provided us with, is actually a vehicle, a 1035 exchange, where you can exchange one annuity into a like-kind situation. Has to be, if it's individually registered, has to move to an individually registered annuity. And that's what we call kind of kicking the can down the road. Perhaps you've had a lot of gain, you're not ready to realize the gain. The 1035 will allow you to not realize the gain. But another important point is for beneficiaries of these contracts. people say, well, I'm going to inherit this someday. I mean, why do I have to pay any taxes on things I inherit? CJ, you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so this is, Malia's doing a great job of explaining this. This is a really tricky area, and I do just want to echo what Malia said, that you need to slow down as you're either inheriting annuities or life insurance policies or as you are looking to move them or cancel them. So Malia's exactly right. Inside of these contracts, one of the beauties of annuities and what the insurance salesman will tell you is that you get tax-deferred growth, kind of like you do inside of an IRA or a 401k. But then when you go to cancel that policy or take the money out or whatever it might be, you get popped with paying all the tax in 1 year. So you think about this and you say, all right, if I put $50,000 into an annuity or even inside of a life insurance policy and the $50,000 grows from $50,000 to $75,000, so I have $25,000 of gain and I go to pull that money out later on to whatever, use it, you cannot get back at the original $50,000 of basis, which is after-tax money, without first paying tax on the $25,000. Because I've had, Malia and I have had people say, no problem, I'll just go grab the original $50 and I'll leave the $25 of gain. Well, there's this little unknown rule called LIFO, last in, first out. Again, LIFO, last in, first out, that says you must first take all of the gain before you can get back to your principal. So imagine, Michael, if you had $50,000 of extra cash that you decided, hey, I didn't want to sit in my bank, so I put it in this annuity. But now, just to get back to my original 50, I have to pay income taxes on whatever the number is, $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 of gain. So it ends up taking that liquid cash and almost makes it illiquid. So in certain circumstances, people will decide, well, what can I do? What are my options? At that point, that's where 1035 exchanges can be a fit sometimes, where people don't necessarily want the money, but they don't want it in this old legacy annuity or life insurance policy that they don't need anymore. So they'll 1035 exchange it, almost like a 401k rollover, by the way. It's in a similar fashion where it's a way to move it from one type of annuity or life insurance policy to another type of annuity or life insurance policy without having to pay the taxes at that time. Although
I was going to say, is this a silly question maybe, but is a 1035 exchange, is that like a form that they fill out or is that an actual product? Good question.
No, it's not a product. It's a form to transfer. Again, like doing a rollover, it's just a process by which you can exchange from one product to another without paying the tax. Although, I kind of laugh at this because I feel like the federal government talking about kicking the can down the road, right? It's like, well, you're going to have to pay the tax at some point. The question is, when are you going to be willing to do it? Which, by the way, folks, this is one of the reasons why we are really cautious around annuities. We don't typically love them, and you have to be really careful with them. They can be a fit for people when it's the right situation, but you have to be really careful because they have a lot of costs and restrictions associated with them.
We do want to, at this time, ask our Class Quiz question of the week. Listeners, if you know the answer to this question, call 815-877-8440. That's 815-877-8440. First person to answer correctly wins a $25 gift card for Texas Roadhouse. The question this week is, an investor who stayed fully invested in the S&P 500 from 1993 to 2013 would have had what percentage of return over this time period? We went over this in the first half of the show today. An investor who stayed fully invested in the S&P 500 from 93 to 2013, didn't move it out, didn't trade around and whatnot, would have had what percentage of return over that time period? 815-877-8440. Malia and CJ, we have a couple of minutes left here. You've talked about annuities. You've talked about preparations and different products other than stuff that you'd normally find in a portfolio. What items should we be concerned about when it comes to estate planning in general?
Well, I think we continue to echo this every couple of weeks as well, Michael, and that's reminding, as CJ said earlier, reminding ourselves that life does not stay static. So when it comes to your estate planning documents, which normally comprise a will, power of attorney documents. Those things, perhaps a trust, those things need to be continually updated. If not updated, at least reviewed, blow the dust off, as we say, every few years. Because what we think we wrote and what we did write might be two different things. We want to make sure beneficiaries are always clearly listed and are up to date. We've talked about situations where ex-wives, ex-husbands have received funds that weren't intended for them, and other people were excluded because those documents were not brought up to date. So we just like to remind our listeners, we're not attorneys. We work with a lot that we can help refer people to, but you want to make sure those documents are in order.
Well, let me echo what Malia is saying here. Estate planning documents, a will or a trust, does not necessarily govern everything. As a matter of fact, many people are surprised to know that your beneficiary designations trump your will or your trust. So let me repeat that. Your beneficiary designations on your IRAs, 401ks, whatever it might be, life insurance policies, trump whatever your will says. So in many cases, we'll have people who say, hey, good news, CJ, I met with the attorney. I created this really brilliant, elaborate estate plan, and they charged me $5,000 for it, and I'm good to go now. And I say to them, well, we manage, you know, 90% of your net worth, and the beneficiary designations on those have not changed. So while you may have created a really pretty document to take care of that other 10%, nothing has changed on our end. So all the old beneficiary designations that we had listed still apply. So many people are surprised to find out they have to, quote unquote, fund their trusts or fund their estate plan. And that funding mechanism is retitling accounts or redoing beneficiary designations. So if you kind of have a visual, so that everything goes through the funnel of the estate plan. So it's fine to do these elaborate documents, but make sure your attorneys are working with you or your financial advisors are working with you to retitle.
815-877-8440. Call Klaus Financial right now for answers to all your retirement questions in one place, or go to klausfinancial.com. That's K-L-A-A-S financial.com. CJ and Malia, thanks so much for coming back onto the show.
Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Hour number two after this. Stay with us.
This is Money in Motion with Klaus Financial. Securities by licensed individuals offered through Investacorp Inc., a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA/SIPC. Advisory services offered through Klaus Financial Asset Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Klaus Financial does not offer tax or legal advice. Any opinion offered during the course of this show is the opinion of that particular investment advisor representative and not necessarily the opinion of Klaus Financial.